Harlan. Tom Parrish, how are you?
I was told I should check in when I call in, so I'm checking in.
Okay, we will begin the call in 5 minutes.
I will eagerly sit by awaiting the beginning.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Lunch and Learn series for the Scarlet Leadership Institute. And before we begin, just a couple of housekeeping items. For those of you that pre-registered for the calls, we sent you a copy of the slide presentation this morning. For those of you that didn't pre-register, I'm happy to send you a copy of the slides. Just drop me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com. During the call, If you have questions, hit *7, and we will be happy to address your questions. And for those of you that are online, you can enter your question in the box and hit submit, and we will field those questions as well. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Joe Scarlett.
Hello, everybody. I hope you're having a good lunch wherever you are. Tom talked to you about the questions. I want you to put down in your calendars now. Our next call will be October 15th, and the topic will be negotiating techniques. And our speaker will be Susan Williams. Susan has been teaching negotiations for a long, long time, and she's been doing it for the Scarlett Leadership Institute since we got started 7 years ago. And it's one of the most sought-after classes we have. So you may think of negotiating as just being a purchase of some kind, but we really negotiate in life all the time. And not just at work, we're negotiating with our spouses, too. So it's a great program, and although it's only an hour, Susan's going to do a great job. So put it in your calendars, Tuesday, October 15th. Today the topic is business writing, and we have Biff Fink with us. Biff does a lot of teaching of business writing a number of different places, including at my old company, Tractor Supply Company. I ran across something recently that I think is of interest. The four most highly sought-after skills employees are looking for are, number one, team building, number two, knowing your numbers, being able to read financial statements, and number three is the ability to communicate both verbally and in writing. And the ability to communicate in writing is so terribly important in life and in business particularly. I've seen more than one executive in my life who's gotten to a certain plateau and could not communicate in writing effectively enough to move past that point. So it's a very important skill for us. I'm particularly passionate about it. And when you're a senior executive and somebody turns in something in writing to you that doesn't make sense, or the kind of thing that you just sort of, you look the other way and hope, wow, I hope somewhere along the line that person gets some coaching. So important topic. But with that, let me turn it over to Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe, and we're excited to be here with you today. As Joe said, Biff Fink is with us, someone that I know really well, and he's been teaching this class with us for a number of years and with great success. I want to say one thing about the slides that we sent out. We will not be going through those exercises point by point. They are sort of an opportunity if you want to practice with some of these things or if you have a question about some of those things. We thought it would be nice for you to have an opportunity to just try some things out. So with that said, I'll ask you the first question, Biff. What bugs you about the emails that you receive?
Well, that's a great question, and it's one that I would throw back to each and every one of you, because I think some of the same things bug us about emails. I'd like you all to be thinking back on some that you have read lately. You really want me to tell what I think? I think the number one problem I see in email is the person has really not thought through their message before they sent it. They're sitting wanting to handle this email that is in front of them, and they're getting ready to send their reply, and so they start thinking and typing. That's a very dangerous way to work, because often you don't know really what you think until you have written it. And in many emails, that occurs to the person 2 or 3 minutes in, whereas the answer could have been given in a few brief sentences. You'll find the person taking you for a walk through the woods on how they started thinking about the topic, other thoughts they had, and then finally they arrive at the gold, which is the message they want you to receive. So it's giving thought to what you're going to say after you have written it, and then deleting all the junk and just sending the straight information.
Yes. In many ways, it's like preparing for a presentation. What is the message you want to deliver, and then putting it together, as opposed to just, as you said, walking down the path. So what's the big deal about correct business writing? I mean, we text now, we IM, we have lots of ways of communicating. We've developed sort of a language around that. And what's wrong with using that? What difference does it make?
Well, you know, the first time I taught this class 7 or 8 years ago, it was for an advertising agency, and the head of the advertising agency told me why he was calling this class together on business writing. These are people who wrote for a living, copywriters, And I said, what is it that's really bothering you about their writing? And he said, they write like they talk. And I thought, what could be wrong with that? That would be conversational and not full of jargon. But what he meant was, I think, a matter of tone and audience. You know, many of them were writing to clients as if they were their buddies that they had known for years, as too informal, not well thought through, a lot of sentence fragments, a lot of conversation on a level that you would really not use if you were thinking for whom you were writing this message. We have to think every time we communicate, whether it's in writing or verbally, we are the face of our company. And for people who don't know the company, we may be the only impression they have. So it's a bit of a task of presenting yourself in the best light in your writing. I think it's really important. I like to use the analogy of stationery, fine stationery versus a scratch pad. And many of us send emails on scrap paper. It's just a few quick thoughts and off it goes. But everything we are doing really is on stationery. It just happens to be in the form of a screen.
Thank you. And I know sometimes people will say, it's an internal email. I'm just emailing to some other department and they don't really care. But can I just say that occasionally that email ends up someplace else? You never know where it's going to end up. You never know who's going to read it. So it needs to be correct every time.
Right. And I think also we are a guest in someone else's home, so to speak, when we send them a message. So there you are sitting in the person's inbox. Do you want to waste their time? Do you want to see through and forgive all your errors? Or do you want to be a professional person sending a nice, clean message?
And the other reason is that it lets me do the work before I send the email. Otherwise, the reader has to do all the work. And
that is a great point, yes.
I used to have someone that I emailed all the time, and I would hear back from them, no punctuation, no capitalization, and it was really a burden to try to read that email. Joe?
You might think a little bit of your email is it's like you're being on stage, you're communicating with people, and that's the face that people are seeing of you, and if you put forth a good face, they're going to be more cooperative with you. They're going to have a greater respect for you. We're all competing to get ahead in business, and if you're sending a bunch of wacko emails around, people have one image of you. If you send professional emails, people have a different image of you. Another important piece of this whole thing, and Biff was talking about it, is, you know, really think through what you're going to say, and if it's at all, it's an important topic, or if it's an emotional topic, after you draft your email, just sit on it, you know, sit on it overnight and look at it the next day. Or I'd say another thing that I've had helped me a lot in writing emails and articles, for example, is just have somebody read it out loud to you. If it's an important topic, have your spouse or somebody close to you read it out loud, and sometimes what you think you said actually sounds differently when somebody else is reading it. It's you being on stage every time you send an email or a letter or anything else in writing. So put your best foot forward. You want to compete for the better job? Put the best emails out there. That'll be one piece of the puzzle of getting forward in life.
Thank you. I think the next slide is an exercise. How could this email be better? And there are a multitude of problems there. There are some punctuation problems. It kind of rambles a little. I found a problem this morning. I don't need to know that. I need to know what you want me to do. Do you have any brief comments about that?
Well, I think that this one starts with a problem in the subject line. That is a long subject line and is really not what the person later contradicts himself and says, that's not what I'm really writing about. So your subject line is your entree. It's your opportunity to get someone's attention. Everyone scans the emails. They scan the subject lines and make the decision, is this something I should read now or maybe later? And you want to be the one that they read now if it's something that's important. So keep a nice, concise, focused subject line to get their attention and then follow through with a nicely written email.
Yes, it doesn't need to be stream of consciousness.
Right.
So We talk a little bit about the most important elements to focus on with email, and there are a number of them, but we'll start with subject line, and you've just spoken to that. I know a lot of times if I get an email and it has a subject line of, I think the one in the exercise that follows is good morning. That could be any day about any topic from anybody. So it's very hard for me then to go back and find something. But what are some other reasons why the subject line is important?
Well, it's motivating. You know, if you write powerfully in the subject line, the person you're writing to is more likely to consider taking action in the way you want them to. It's a chance to get some good attention, a spotlight on your issue. So take advantage of it. Someone said the subject line is the most valuable real estate in the communication, and I think that's absolutely true.
Well, go ahead, Joe.
Well, if the subject line is like the headline in the newspaper. If you want people to read, you got to tell them what you're going to talk about. And if you don't, I get emails from time to time with no subject line, and I'm looking at this three paragraphs worth of gibberish, and I say, I look down at my computer and I hit the button that begins with D called delete.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even read stuff like that. So you got to say in the subject line what the topic is, and if it's something that I have a particular interest in, I'm going to grab onto it. But if you put nothing there or put gibberish down, it doesn't make any sense. People often will go just move on beyond there. A little sort of a word from a former CEO. I used to let it be known in the company that I'm not going to read an email more than a page long. And if I get something more than a page long, I just hit the delete button. So as you're sending emails out there, you want to make them short, to the point, interesting, and it all starts off with that subject line, a subject that is going to grab my attention and make me read on as to what you reread into the content of what you're trying to communicate to me.
Exactly. And, you know, you make a good point, Joe. Sometimes, although someone might not delete it if it's more than one screen, the most important part of what you're writing might be the last paragraph, and if that's in the second or the third screen, I'm going to miss it too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I would also add that sometimes it's good to leave the subject line blank until you've written your email and edited it down, and then you really know exactly what you're talking about, and then you can compose a good subject line.
Excellent. Now, on the other side of that coin, mm-hmm. Is it ever okay to just have the subject line be your message? I've gotten emails before, and maybe the subject line would say, meet me today at 4 o'clock or whatever. Is that okay?
It depends on the level and the relationship that you have with the other person. If it's a colleague that you see on a daily basis and you've talked about the lunch or whatever and you're just confirming that it's okay, sure, I've done that before. And say 8 o'clock is good.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the other elements. Less is more, and we've just talked a little bit about that, about the whole volume of the whole thing, but also how you organize it. Bullet points are so important. They can make something that just looks like a mess into something that looks organized, and I can figure out 1, 2, 3 what it is you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and experts who have reviewed emails for years will tell you that the average person reading an email is not actually reading. They're actually scanning, looking for important information, and that's the point of bullets. They see a bullet and they know their eye goes right there. That's where the meat is. And so take advantage of that and put your information into bullet points whenever you can. There are some problems with bullet points, though, that we talk about a lot in class, keeping them parallel, keeping them at the same level of specificity and so on.
Right.
They're great, though. Bullet points are wonderful.
The other piece under that bullet point is no more than one topic per email. And I cannot tell you the number of times I'll send an email with two things in it, and the other person will invariably respond with an answer to the first thing and totally ignore the second.
And what do you do
then? I do that all the time.
I know.
So you wind up writing a second email to say, what about point number two? You might as well have started with two separate emails, one for each of the two points.
Right, and I've started doing that now because I think it's just easier. Again, you want to make it as easy as possible for the reader.
Sure, and a lot of times one of your points can be acted on immediately, and the person can just do the action and get rid of your email, whereas the other one needs some thought. If you put them both in the same email, the first point is not going to get answered until they've figured out the second point, and you might have unnecessary delay.
Exactly. So when we look at the next exercise, and it's no accident that it's following the subject, less is more. It just goes on and on and on, you know, some personal comments. Remember her? Crazy. And three topics in the same email, one personal and two having to do with business. Anything you want to add about that?
It's just not respectful of the reader's time. You know, if you want to have a little phone chat, take care of it. You know, but to clutter up an email with this kind of side issues is really not professional, no matter how well you know the person.
Right. And, Joe, you're always talking about we need to be good stewards of other people's times. It's not just in meetings or in face-to-face conversations, but I think in email as well. Don't you agree?
Sure. Don't waste my time making me read something that's irrelevant or not important or in more detail than I want. One of the just a general rule of thumb for anybody growing in business, the junior people tend to communicate too much information to the senior people. And what senior people want is a couple of bullet points, get right to the point, and then if I want more data, if I want more input, I'll go back and ask you for it, as opposed to inundating me with more than I can handle in the first place. You know, another thought that I want to share with you all, too, is sometimes people will say, well, it doesn't make any difference because my boss doesn't know how to write an email. It does make a difference because other people see those emails. So even if your boss has bad skills in this regard, there's no excuse for you to have bad skills. As a matter of fact, it's all the more reason that you should be setting the example for others and doing things in the most professional way. So don't let a bad example set by somebody higher up in your organization be justification for not doing the right things in terms of all communication, but particularly in terms of emails.
You know, Joe, that was a good point when you talked about junior people sending too much information. I'm sure it's not restricted to them, but they may do it more often. It also brings up another point, and that is to think whether this information you want to send is really an email, or is it more a face-to-face meeting, or is it a phone call, or is it a more formal memo or letter? You know, each one of those formats can take different kinds of information. And I'm thinking of a person that might want to ask you to follow a recommendation they have, and they may have to give 12 reasons why they think it's a good idea. It'll be much better to be face-to-face and have you give your objections or your support, and it would cut the time in half, and they wouldn't spend all the time on the email or waste your time and having to read it all.
The next piece and the most important elements to focus on is about format. And, you know, we've talked about it really is business correspondence. So would you not have a greeting and a signature line? And what about the tone? Can it be just, hey, how you doing? Or is it more of a business tone? Talk to us about that.
Tone is really a matter of respect, and it's a matter of knowing your audience. So I like, in my class, I like to ask everybody to extend their hand parallel to the floor and say, now you are talking to a peer. You would talk in a certain way or write in a certain way to a peer. Now I ask them to elevate their hand more toward the ceiling. Now you're talking to a superior. That requires a different tone than your best buddy. Or then incline your hand down toward the floor. This might be a subordinate or somebody that you don't know very well. That takes a different tone. Too casual should not be your first approach. The less you know somebody, usually instinctively, we're a little bit more formal, aren't we? And it should be the same way in your email. Hold back a bit.
Joe, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes. Always, to talk about the formality of things, when in doubt, go to the next level. Go to the more formal level. Always go to the most professional level. If there's any question in your mind at all, do things in the most effective way. You know, Biff brought up a point before that I think is very important. I want to chat a little bit more about it. Talking to people face-to-face. Whenever there's an important issue or an emotional issue or you're trying to sell your ideas, it's very hard to do that in writing. You're much better off trying to arrange a face-to-face meeting or at least a telephone call. You might want to send some baseline information ahead of time, but it's very hard to sell something in an email or sell your ideas or sell a product or sell anything. So getting to the face-to-face discussion is the way to effectively communicate your thoughts and ideas, particularly the important ones.
Absolutely. And if I'm talking to you face-to-face, I'm getting so much more of your message than just the words on the page. And if I'm not, I miss so much. I can be talking about a proposal that I have, and I can tell from the look on your face how you're taking it or how you're responding to it. Even if I'm on the phone, I've got the tone of your voice that makes a huge difference. I can tell, you know, just by the way someone answers the phone, are they in a good mood or a bad mood? Is this a bad time? Maybe it isn't. But you don't get any of those cues when you're in email, and it is so easy to misinterpret an email and take it the wrong way when perhaps the sender was just as innocent as could be in sending the letter and the email, and they thought, you know, there's no way anyone can misinterpret it. There's always a way someone can misinterpret it because we have different meanings for different words.
And we also have to always remember that email is one-way communication. There is no feedback when you're sending something, and that's why it's so important not to flame, which is, you know, writing things all in caps or shooting from the hip. I think Joe's advice about waiting is very, very wise. You know, it's much better to think things over, regain your balance, and then respond. Maybe not even the same day if it's a heavy issue.
And one way to avoid that happening by accident, because we've all had that moment when we pushed send and went, oh, gosh, where'd that go, is not to put the address in until you're ready to send it.
Right.
So look at exercise 9. How could we make this email better? This is a mess, I think, because of tone. What do you think about it?
I thought Joe was trying to offer another idea.
Oh, I'm sorry. Joe?
I was, but then I got to thinking about what you're saying next, and I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, this is casual. This exercise number 9 is casual to the point.
To a fault, really.
Really, really bad. That should not even be an email. I wouldn't even know how to rewrite this one.
Okay. Hey, guys, and let me know if you're up for it, guys, and cheers.
I'm wanting a gig. You know, he wants business. You'd think he'd be a little bit serious. There's going to be money involved.
Right.
May, June. Is it May or June? May and June. Part of a run of Scottish dates. There's going to be travel involved. There's more to it than is meeting the eye in this one. I think the person should have taken more time and thought before sending it out.
And Biff, these were real emails.
I know. I know.
You know what I was going to say before is when we get, I know in business of all of you out there who are driven, you're probably type A personalities, and somebody sends you an email and you get fired up about, oh, he's full of baloney, blah blah blah, and you start hitting your keyboard and you start writing things out, and I've been guilty of this like everybody else, and you get all wrapped up in it, and then you send it. And lo and behold, you never should have sent it. So anytime, just as a rule of thumb, no matter where you are in business, anytime something like that happens, you can draft till the cows come home, but put it in your draft box, and I guarantee the next morning when you open it up, you either won't send it, or if you do send it, you're going to modify it and make it much, much more professional. So I know it's hard to do when you're a type A personality and want to get things done, but you're much better off sitting on those things and letting it percolate overnight, and you will do a much more professional job later on.
I couldn't agree more, Joe, and I think the place where the most caution of all is warranted is when you are sending information on your phone, because it is so easy with your fumbling thumbs to send it to another person, or autocorrect is a whole other issue, but I actually sent a message I wish I had not sent. It went to the wrong person because I inadvertently pressed reply instead of forward. So be really, really, really careful using your phone.
Biff, when should are there any good times you should be using your phone for business communication?
I would think only if it was something immediately important. You know, the person needed to know right then.
And or facts.
Or somebody you know real well. Otherwise, you know, I would just say, briefly, I can write better at the office. You know, put a delay in there and then do a good job later.
Right. I agree with you. The next elements, we've talked about the first one, repeat the question if you're providing an answer. And we've already had that discussion. But the next is what I think is the part that is, it either makes it easy for the reader or it makes it very difficult, and that's the grammar, spelling, punctuation, and capitalization. Do you want to say a few words about that just in general?
Yes. I think a lot of these issues come up when we are trying to do two things at once. That is, we are trying to compose our message and use correct grammar, spelling, punctuation. Those are really surface details that should be handled at the end. After you've completed your message, maybe even wait a little bit, you know, 10 minutes even or a half a day, and then go back and check your grammar and check your spelling, your capitalization, all these details. But to try to write a perfect letter all in one go is dooming yourself to not have a successful email.
Right. It just can't happen. And I know a lot of times we'll get things with misspelled words or bad punctuation, and you just think, what were they thinking?
Mm-hmm.
What is wrong with these people that they can't? And, of course, being an old English major, it does matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, Joe, I know you feel really strongly about that, too, because of the impression piece. If it's not written well, if I'm not careful enough to spell the words right, and if I don't know something, not to look it up, then I'm not very professional about what else I do, most likely.
Well, that's exactly right. If you're sending communication to anybody and you're dopey enough not to use spell check to start with, people look at you and they think to yourself, well, you're not very professional. You're showing a lack of professionalism. There's no excuse for misspellings, for lack of capitalizations, for lack of putting periods in, for run-on sentences. I mean, all that stuff can be corrected on that by the computer, and you should know it. You should know it yourself. But if you want to get ahead in this world, you want to be the very best communicator, so that people see the best of you. And if you send out a piece of rubbish, the people have a different impression of you. So always just get it right and take your time to say the words the way they're supposed to be said. And things like punctuation and capitalization should be a slam dunk. That should never be an issue.
Mm-hmm. And people who are reading these mistakes have no way of knowing whether you don't know the difference or whether you're just in a hurry. So why give them the opening?
The assumption is, from my perspective, is you don't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's the risk you run.
Right.
Yep.
Remember, if you have questions, callers, hit *7 or online, enter your question in the box and hit submit. We do have a couple of questions. The first one is, how do you recommend handling something that could be misinterpreted? I've had some folks use emoticons, which help but aren't always appropriate. So it's a two-part question, so why don't you answer that one first?
Excuse me, can you please define emoticons? Because I saw that word a couple of days ago for the first time, and I never heard it before, so I don't think everybody
understands. Those are the little smiley faces that you make with punctuation, like the colon and the parenthesis.
I don't think they belong in, but my opinion, I wouldn't put them in most professional communication.
I agree. I don't think they belong. They're shortcuts. Why take a shortcut?
There you go. And then the second piece, what about handling or responding to an email that annoys you or seems rude when there could have been a misunderstanding on your part?
I've face-to-face communication. Just if it's bothering you, call the person and talk to them.
Right. The worst thing I think that you can do is to respond out of anger or respond as though they meant it the way you heard it or the way you read it, because you could always have made a mistake. So I think always checking.
Yes, being in touch is always the answer. And nail it as quickly as possible. Don't let yourself get in a swivet over it. Nail it right then.
Mary, did we answer the first part of that question?
We said we thought that they did not have a place in professional correspondence.
An exception to that would be, and this is tractor emails. A lot of times it's a communication among a team, and the leader is very excited about something and will decorate a congratulatory email. You know, then you just like the guy's enthusiasm and you can let it go. But in general, emoticons, no.
Another question, the double space no longer applies. We should only single space between sentences, correct?
Well, I always double space after a number and a period for clarity. I use my I. I think there are different opinions on this. That's all I can say. In general, because you're on a screen and people are reading fast, I think space is of an advantage to you. That's why I like to write paragraphs that maybe have only one or two sentences, where normally the thought is one thought and you would keep it in a big paragraph. On the screen, it looks too dense. And so by the same logic, I would say sometimes double spacing is fine. But you have to, keep company policy in mind. That'd be a good topic at work to say, what do we think? What do we agree on this? Some of these rules are really much more flexible now than they were. Grammar rules too. You know, how many commas when you have three items? Is it one comma or two? Can you have a sentence that's incomplete? Can you start a sentence with but or and? You know, all these rules are in flux now as we all write more conversationally.
Thank you. So we have a couple of exercises if you want to just play with that. We have a capitalization exercise. We have a punctuation exercise. And by the way, if you're interested in knowing if you got it all right, and you will drop us an email, we will send you the answer sheet, if you like, as it were. So final bullet point under the most important elements, and this is one of my particular pet peeves, is the proper use of words. If you don't know, look it up. But what if you don't know to look it up? What if you don't know you don't know?
Well, happily, there are some wonderful lists of commonly misused words, affect, effect, that kind of thing, online. And if you will just Google in commonly confused word pairs, likewise spelling, there are great spelling lists that can save you a lot of time and explaining the differences between sound-alike words.
And I think it's important from time to time to just review that list. I know I think I have a pretty good grasp of most words and what they mean, but sometimes I'll review it again just because I haven't seen it in a while,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be something odd or something that I've missed. We have another question. What about the use of colored fonts beyond the typical change for a reply? So I might answer your question. I might forward or reply to your question and just put the answers in red beside the question,
yes,
or another color. But what about other colors other than that?
I think in general, color can be overused and sometimes look a little rah-rah, a little amateurish. So I would really double think whether I really want to change font, colors, font size. Keep it as uniform as you can. Remember, you're trying to make it easy for your reader.
Thank you. And another question. Nowadays, people are including a lot of information in their signatures. In some cases, I think it's too much information. Is this accepted as the norm, or should we keep the signature simple? I use a simple thanks and my name and sometimes my title. Do I need to step it up?
I happen to be in your camp on this one. Some people do have four or five lines, even with quotes, inspirational quotes or whatever after the name. And if you go back to the same person over and over and over, that's a little tiresome and redundant. I think simplicity should be the watchword. Unless you need to be reached at all your various contacts and you want them available available to people, then I would use them below your signature.
If you're selling, that's very important. If you're leaving quotes with your name, just change the quotes every couple of days. But mm-hmm. if you're leaving the same quote there, people just sort of runs past them. They ignore it.
Right.
Exactly. I agree. Okay. So I think the four exercise sentences with the correct word, I think we can talk about those really quickly because I've tried to use the ones that were the most frequently misused. So what did the boss imply or infer from your report, this?
What did the boss infer? That means to read in. Imply is what you are sending out without saying it. So what did the boss infer? What did the boss gather from your report?
And then there's the affect and effect one. How will the decision to streamline operations affect or effect the workforce?
The correct answer would be affect with an A.
Because affect is the verb.
Yes. Well, effect can also be a noun or a verb.
In a very rare case.
In a very rare case.
We are eager or anxious to receive reimbursement for our travel expenses. Now, this one is a trick one.
Well, I hope I have it right then. Anxious is an emotional state, you know. The correct answer is the other one. We are eager to receive reimbursement. Anxious means we're nervous about it.
Unless my account is overdrawn,
then
I'm going to be anxious to receive it.
Yes, hopefully never in business.
There you go. And then finally, fewer and less. And that's one that we hear misused so often.
Many of these, it's hard to know anymore because so many people use them incorrectly. But think about less and fewer. Less cannot be measured as individual items, whereas fewer can be measured as individual items. So fewer muffins, less sugar. And you'll hear that one abused all over TV and all kinds of printed matter, too.
Professional ads. We hear it all the time. We see it all the time. Thank you. And there are lots more, but those are just examples of probably some of the most frequently misused words. Joe, do you have any favorites?
I took your little test here, and I got four right this time, but you all should know that Mary is forever correcting me about using the word incorrectly. So I just have a general suggestion for everybody on the call. We're all involved in writing all the time one way or another. And it just might be interesting for you to, first of all, find somebody that you know knows written communication very well, and then print a half a dozen of your last emails and a last letter or two you wrote, and just say, hey, give me some critique on this. I think it'd be very educational for you, for every one of us. And in some cases, you would get, you know, you're going to find out you're better than you think you are. In other cases, you're going to find out you're continually making the same kind of mistake, and somebody can help you with it. So just from time to time, I know that in my case, Mary's always correcting me. So I just she is very, very good at grammar and punctuation and so on, and I'm okay, but she's better, and so she will coach me along the way. And everybody needs to find a coach in that regard, unless you happen to be very, very good to start with.
Exactly.
That's a really good point. And I think sometimes in approaching a coach, the way you word your question as you show them your emails is important. And if you say, what do you think of this? It could be more effective to say, how can I improve this? I think the how can be a really magic word to open up suggestions, because then you're keeping it on an objective level. When you say, what do you think of this? It's almost like saying, what do you think of me? What do you think of me as a writer? Whereas, in other words, if you say, how can this be improved? You're looking for technical information. This could be shorter. This wasn't clear. That kind of thing.
Right. I agree with you.
That's good advice. But Mary, have we asked the people on the call if they'd have any questions?
We have said if you've got a call, *7. If you're on the if you're on the phone, *7, and we'll take your questions. And we're going to open up for questions in just a moment. I think we have a couple more slides that we want to review, and then we'll be ready to take questions. editing, briefly. It's just an email, for crying out loud.
It is written communication. All written communication needs editing because we don't think of things in their best form, usually as our first thought. And you're confusing yourself, as I said earlier, if you are trying to write correctly and also write good content at the same time. The first step should be to get the content down on paper in any form. Find out what you meant and then shorten it and finally check the surface details in editing.
Right.
Yeah.
So the next slide, expert at your elbow, we just talked about that. Who is that person in your office who's really good at this? Ask for their help. And the next slide, best references. These are books that we have found really helpful. There are hundreds of books on writing out there. But I think the final bullet point on that slide is the website for the English department at Purdue University. And there are some wonderful examples and exercises there, and they can answer just about any question that you have. For those of us who would rather go online than find a book and try to read it.
Mm-hmm. I use that site a lot. It's very useful, and I think they have a nice approach because they have an answer sheet, but it's not right there with the questions. So it gives you a chance to honestly wrestle with some of the grammar points, and then you can check your answer in another location. While we're talking about these items, I would like to put in a special plug for the Greg Reference Manual. It has such a boring title. Everyone out there might be thinking, well, not for me, that's for the library. But this is it's the clearest explanation of grammar and punctuation, spelling, the whole gamut of issues that we've been talking about this morning. Wonderful illustrations. It is written me to you, very user-friendly. I can't recommend the Greg Reference Manual highly enough. Give it a look.
Thank you. And final, your final tip.
My final one is you cannot improve your writing all at once. You know, and it's daunting to try. But if you could take one small area of your writing and work on that this week, that would be the way to improve over the long term. Most of us have a feeling what our weakness might be. It might be spelling, you know, and a key to that is that if you've been avoiding using certain words because you might be misspelling them, maybe this is the week that you want to make the correct use and spelling of those words your goal. But if you can improve one habit a week, that's 50 a year, and over your career, you'll be way ahead in a few years from where you are right now.
Great. Joe, any final point that you have to make?
I think that we all need to recognize that our communication, all of it, but particularly in writing, is what we're talking about here, it's that's you putting your best foot forward, and whether it's routine communication or making proposals or whatever, you want to go out there and do the best possible job because that's your face. And if you want to get ahead in this world, you want to make things happen, you've got to do a good job of communication. When you think about a leadership role, leaders become good leaders because of the way they are able to communicate with the people that work for them. And this is one of those key ways of communication. So don't ever put this on a back burner. It's a very important and an essential skill. And as I mentioned earlier, I've seen executives who get to a certain level in business and they just don't get any further because their communication skills don't measure up. So always work on this. And it's like any other skill in life. The more you practice, the more you work on it, the better you're going to get at it.
I love what you said, Joe. And it occurred to me also that it's really often a matter of humility. You have to be willing to say, I am going to be a beginner in some area of my writing. If you think everyone is expecting you to be top-notch from the moment you arrived, you're probably not going to improve very much. But if you have a humble attitude about it and cultivate an expert at your elbow, maybe even taking a class if somebody recommends that for you, you can improve. It is not rocket science. There's just a finite number of areas in it, and if you work on them one at a time, you will improve, and you'll be a much better communicator, and you'll be happier with yourself because you'll know that you have invested in your future.
Thank you. We have one comment from our online audience. Someone said, I must say, I like this resource, the Purdue site. Parentheses, I graduated from Purdue. So that's great. We'll now open
Is that my
it.
Son?
I'm sorry?
Is that my son?
No, I don't believe so. Now we'll open it for questions. Remember, *7, if you're on the phone or online, enter your question in the box and hit submit.
Hey, folks, I just wanted to say thank you for a great presentation. And something that I've always found a little unusual, when you go back, you type your email up, you proofread it before you send it, you run the spell check, you hit that send button, and then you go back and read it again, and just the different meanings of words, and spell check missed something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hi, I have a quick question.
Okay.
My name's Sam Cosby. I'm with the Beacon Center, and I wanted to ask a quick question about we talked about making sure you're using words correctly, and then also making sure that your emails you're not using too many words or it's not drawn out. I want to ask a question regarding how the rules of grammar and proper writing change. Two extreme examples. I remember in school, one of the first things I remember learning was two spaces after a period, and sure enough, that's definitely changed in the last few years. Also, I saw a story in the last month that Merriam-Webster had added a definition to the word literally that basically means figuratively, and so the point is, does that do? In the context of what we've learned today, do you think that that emphasizes the importance of keeping up with trends in writing, or does it emphasize the need to not be wordy and just get to the point and say what you need to say in as few words as possible?
What a great question. To me, it's a matter of what you read, because you're influenced by it. You know, look for well-written magazines, newspapers, and follow their usage. I think you'll always be in a good spot then. I've never heard of this literally, figuratively one. I can't imagine that. I'm going to research it now, of course. I would never try to be short for the reason of avoiding a mistake, if that was the implication of what you were saying. I think if you are sincere and check your work, you'll be effective in your use of words.
Thank you.
Sure.
We have another online question. What is the proper closing for business correspondence? Some use sincerely or yours or regards, etc. Are all of them acceptable and appropriate in business?
Sincerely yours is the standard close. Yeah. You can express your personality. I think it's a matter of reading it as a recipient would. You know, does this seem too formal for the rest of my letter or email? Does it seem too chatty? Try to be one of a piece. Keep the same tone throughout.
Right. And I have a colleague who signs emails with all the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that.
Right.
I mean, it seems to send a hopeful
yes.
thought.
And it's a fingerprint. That's the person's
right.
way of speaking. Yeah.
Right.
I think the old rule was sincerely is for friendly letters, and sincerely yours was for business letters. So I see sincerely yours most often.
Thank you. *7 on the phone or question in the box and hit submit.
I wish somebody would write in with their favorite bugs about emails. You know, what do you see in an email that just drives you crazy? I think we'd all learn a lot from each other on that.
we have a question.
Yeah, this is Jim Thien, and I have a question. Sometimes on business emails, I will write thanks and have a great day. Is that inappropriate, or should I stick with sincerely, yours or sincerely?
I think thanks and have a great day is perfect. Yeah, it's friendly, open-handed, and generous. I like it.
Thanks.
And over the online questions, irregardless drives me insane. And wait, I just had this conversation yesterday with someone. There is no such word as irregardless.
Right, right.
So thank you for reminding us of that.
But it sounds high tone, doesn't it?
Yeah. Even I knew that.
Well, we'll be fixing that, Joe. Other questions?
Okay. This is Joe again. I want to give my sincere thanks to Biff for putting this together and teaching us about good writing skills. I'm thrilled about the amount of number of questions we had come in today. So it's a really obviously a hot topic, and we may repeat this again sometime next year. As just a general note to everybody, if you have any thoughts about topics you would like us to cover or speakers you'd like to have join us, please let us know. And as a reminder, again, Tuesday, October 15th, Negotiating Techniques with Susan Williams. It's one of the very best received classes that we've had at the Scarlett Leadership Institute. Mary, Biff, thank you very much, and I hope you all have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.